With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Case File 21 of Microscope, the show that examines some of the world's biggest mysteries. To kick off Series 2 of a bang, we've arranged a chat with an expert in solving puzzles as I talk to world-famous detective Murlock Bones. Murlock is known around the world for his abilities to solve crime, the write-ups of his various cases becoming best-selling books in their own right. This episode explores how he got to the bottom of perhaps his most celebrated investigation, the case of the spooky dog scenario. The initial facts could not be more shocking. 10 people found dead, strewn across the moors of Dartmoor, with rumours in the nearby town that it was all the result of being mauled by a ghostly hound. Though as to be expected with a Murlock Bones case, the truth is not quite what it seems. I talk in depth with Murlock about how he eventually solved it, but the recording starts with me asking Murlock about his early work and how exactly he would describe himself.
Yes, I basically am a freelancer, if you want to put it like that. If there's a crime that they feel they need help with, I'm drafted in. I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I'm bloody good at what I do. Simple as that.
Yes, you're widely regarded as being one of the smartest people in the country. Have you always been sort of academically gifted?
I remember when I made a Victoria sponge at the age of two.
Right.
People couldn't quite understand how I did it. I'd woken up one morning, Saturday, very early. Everyone else was asleep, and I thought, I'm going to make a Victoria sponge. Yeah. You know, a lovely smell for the family to wake up.
I mean, is there a need to elaborate much on this story? You're just saying that when you were young, you made a cake.
Well, I mean, by your tone, yeah. It would suggest that you see a lot of two-year-olds making Victoria sponges.
No, not at all.
Let me tell you. Neighbours, family and friends were agog at what I'd done. And that was when people thought, well, hang on a minute. This kid might be the real McCoy.
A bit of a genius.
A bit of a genius, yeah. At seven, I...
made a souffle.
I started, made a souffle and a quiche. And it really dawned on them that they thought I would have a future in baking.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, I was more interested in where the eggs came from.
Right.
I was more interested in battering the eggs.
Beg your pardon?
I was interested in how these eggs just turned into a sponge. But I couldn't care about the cake. It was more about the process.
Yes.
And when I discovered my first body at the age of 11,
Good Lord.
I know what to do here. I know what to do.
So how did a history of making cakes at an early age help deal with the fact you discovered a body at the young age of 11?
You show me a pineapple cheesecake. Mm. I'll look at it. I'll walk around it.
Yeah.
I'll spend some time with it.
Okay, what?
I will spend some time with it.
Yeah, I heard you.
I could tell you how that was made.
Sure.
I could write down the ingredients.
Yeah.
And I could probably have a guess on how it was done.
Yeah.
That is exactly how I approached the body.
How are those skills transferable?
Well, because you just work backwards. It's as simple as that.
Right.
I saw the body and I thought, this is exactly like looking at a cheesecake. I can just work out who the person is. I can work out why they've ended up here, and also, sadly, why they've left this mortal coil.
What did you glean, then, just from looking at it? Were you able to work out who the victim was, how they met their unfortunate demise?
Well, I took the wallet out of the breast pocket. I opened up the wallet, took out a piece of paper,
yep.
And for a brief second thought, my God, this is the Queen. It was only a couple of minutes later that I realised I was holding a £5 note. A
couple of minutes, that took you.
And actually, it wasn't the Queen, but it was a chap called Derek Fawn, a well-known criminal.
Derek Fawn? And how did he die?
He had his head chopped off, right. Which I thought was incredible. I mean, I'd never seen that something like that before.
No, but you're 11 years old.
Yes, I was 11 years old. And his head was actually about 2-3 metres at the other end of the road.
So you found him on a road?
Yes. Now, the problem when you find someone is, I don't care who you are, you're suspect number one.
No, I don't think you are in this situation. Not as an 11-year-old boy with a fondness for cheesecakes.
At the time, I was clever, but I was too clever at school.
Right.
I got bored very easily because no one could keep up with me. So I was a bit naughty, I guess you could say. I was a bit naughty. So there were suspicions around that I had maybe taken this bloke's head clean off.
Right, because you were a bit of a swat at school. You were implicated as the suspect number one in the crime.
I was incredibly bright as a child. I remember when I was 9 and the fairy cakes that I just produced and time again.
You made a lot of cakes as a child.
I did. I really did. But that's by the by. I do not believe in crime.
What does that mean?
I do not believe that you are born a criminal. I don't believe that if you commit a crime, you are a criminal.
Right, well, one of those is probably true.
They're both true. That's right. Why I said them.
Yeah, I sort of have an inkling at what point you're sort of trying to get to in terms of society and morality and whatnot. But I think a clear crime has been committed when an 11-year-old boy finds a corpse with its head removed.
Yes, that was a crime. Right. I did have to put my hands up and say, you know, actually, this definitely is a crime. His family weren't happy when I gave that little speech. They said, this looks like a crime to us. And I went, you know what? You're right.
And very quickly, as an 11-year-old child, you were able to solve this particular crime, work out who did it and how it happened?
I went to the funeral. I brought a Black Forest gatto.
Yeah.
And I circled the room. And I did what I told you earlier. I observed. And, I mean, the ball's on this guy. The guy that had done it actually turned up to the funeral.
Let's picture the scene. So everyone's sort of there. It's quite a sort of solemn service, as people remember the demise of Derek. You're doing what? Laps of the room? Just walking around the perimeter, glancing at everybody, whilst apparently eating a cake, a Black Forest gatto?
Yes, I am doing laps of the room. I'm walking around the coffin. I then walk around the congregation. I'm dressed all in black, and I'm eating a Black Forest gatto.
Right, sort of doing a sort of figure of eight formation around the congregation and then the coffin.
Yes, and I'm also, you know, I don't turn my back on anyone either, so I am sometimes walking backwards, and I'm just very slowly observing everyone. And, you know, I'm a precocious young man.
So people are giving, like, speeches about Derek. There's a vicar giving a sermon. That's all happening and you're just walking around.
Yes, the vicar, he did ask me to stop a couple of times. I did get in the way when they tried to lift him out. And I also did laps when they buried him. I circled the coffin and the congregation. Now, it was raining. It was a very muddy day. And I was circling for quite some time, to the extent where I actually started lowering myself, and I created almost like a moat around congregation.
You were doing so many laps that you basically dug up the ground, in effect, and water filled the space.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was an empty moat. The rain was later. But basically what happened, as the coffin was lowered, I was also 6 feet under because I'd been walking so ferociously around the congregation. I crawled out and then realised that everyone was actually stuck on this kind of like island. It then rained terribly, one of the worst storms I've seen in 10 years. That then filled the moat. And, that was, they weren't happy with me.
Well, I guess the perfect locale in which to point out who was responsible for Derek's death.
Exactly. I had trapped them. I called the police and I said, one person on that island killed the person who is in the coffin. And so one by one, we went through. It was harrowing. I have to, you know, the family weren't happy about this at all. But we did find our culprit. After about 2 hours, he'd had enough. He jumped in the moat.
Oh, I see. So he just gave up. You didn't actually work out. You didn't deduce who it was. You just spoke long enough that the person who was responsible just couldn't take it anymore.
He couldn't take it. He couldn't take it. He said he was getting wet, he was getting tired, and he was bored. So he jumped in the moat and he tried to swim away. Now, I mean, this guy's thick because, you know, the moat is just circular. So yeah. He kept swimming away and he kept saying, "See you later, suckers," stuff right. like that.
But rather
then
than
he just come back round.
So rather than trying to cross the moat, he was just doing laps of its circumference.
He didn't work out. And I mean, I don't know why. It wasn't that big an island. It was about the size of maybe, I don't know, a small bedroom that can house a double bed. I don't know, something like that. He just kept doing laps. So he'd go around one way and he'd go, "You'll never catch me."
Yeah.
And then he'll come round back the other side and he'll go, "Ha ha. But did you know I can go this way?" He's right. saying stuff like this.
Did his enthusiasm wane in his conviction that you wouldn't catch him as he constantly came back to where you and the police were stood?
I remember on the 12th lap, when he came round, you could tell in his voice when he went, "Oh, you boys are good."
Yeah.
I remember thinking, yeah, we got him here. Right. He's tiring. And then as he went back round,
yeah.
I said, "See you on the other side." And he went, "Huh?" So we waited for a bit till he came back round, and then he went, oh, right, well, and then we just helped him out.
Yeah, right, arrested
he
him.
He was arrested, and he has been in prison now for 33 years.
Now, that was you, aged 11, solving crimes. You're now a grown-up, a full-grown man. And I want to talk about a particularly mysterious case that has been spoken quite a lot in the press of late. And how you describe this? The case of the spooky dog scenario, I believe, is how it was reported. And this is what? This is your assertion that a murder in Dartmoor wasn't the result of ghostly dogs, as was reported in the press, but was actually at the hands of a murderer.
There was a crime scene. Always start with a crime scene.
Yes.
As I said in my first book, there can be no crime without a crime scene.
Yeah.
Take away the crime, you've just got yourself a scene.
Yeah.
I turned up. I remember the day well. It was cold, and it was raining.
Yeah.
I found a shocking. How would you describe it? I mean, it was a crime scene. 10 bodies everywhere.
What do you mean everywhere?
Well, this scene was big. Have you ever been to Dartmoor?
A couple of times. Well, once maybe, on a family holiday a long time ago.
Yeah, there's a Greggs, there's a W.H. Smith, and so I decided.
And lots of moorland.
There's a hell of a lot of moorland behind the W.H. Smith that I was in. Because I always like to get a notepad, bit of paper, and a bar of dairy milk.
Right. So you can write down the clue. You don't keep a notebook on you all the time.
No, never.
You buy one in each new city you visit.
I never. If I solve a crime, I don't know if I've ever told anyone this. You're very good. I open the notebook to the last page that I wrote something on, which is usually the name of the person that I think has done it.
Mm.
And then I frame it. And so I've got a room in my house with 1,500 open notebooks,
yeah.
All with the names of people that I have sent away.
100% success rate?
No. There are a lot of names on there that I'm very sadly, I wish I'd carried on writing because,
they were wrongfully convicted.
Yes, they were.
And no thought to remove them from this trophy room?
I don't believe in regrets. I don't believe in, I face my mistakes head on. I like to wake up and think, yes, you know what? I got that 400 cases wrong. But they, you know, you need light and shade. You can't just walk into a room and see success.
So, I can believe that. So heading back to Dartmoor then, you've got 10 bodies spread out, as you say, quite a wide area. Sort of try and paint this crime scene for us.
It's about a 3-mile radius. Where these bodies are, and that's a lot of tape.
What do you mean? Like police tape to cordon the area off?
Yeah, about 3 miles square. People don't pay attention to tape that big. I mean, I've got to one end and then some kids have broken it the other side.
And I don't want to get too morbid about this, but how did these 10 people die? What were the sort of what sort of signs were on them? How were they sort of found?
Let's start with the feet. They had been completely chewed up. Now, I know, it's not a great image. So I'm walking around thinking, right, okay. I went to the next body. The neck. Huge bite marks in the neck.
Right.
I'm going over to another body. Bite marks on the fingers and a couple of eyes missing. All right, that's not great, that. I'll write that down in my notebook. These bodies, all 10, had been bitten. You're looking around thinking, is there a monster out there? You know, and I started shouting that. Is there anyone out there? Stuff like that.
That's what the locals were saying, wasn't it? That there was some sort of beast on the moor sort of eating victims.
There had been a rumour in the W.H. Smith staff room that...
Why were you allowed in the staff room?
I had to question everyone in Dartmoor.
Right.
And they said that there was a rumour that out the back, when they threw away sandwiches and chocolate and such like, every day they were missing. I explained to them, is that because maybe the bin men had collected it? They said yes, and so we moved on quickly. They weren't a clever lot in there.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And were the victims connected in any way? Do they know each other?
They all worked at the same branch of Debenhams.
Yeah.
They all worked on the third floor, you know, where they sold speakers, radios, televisions.
And then what did you do to sort of try and get to the bottom of it? Did you, like, go undercover, try and sort of stake the place out?
I've put my life in danger many, many times. And I thought the only way of seeing if there is something out there is to go out there myself.
Out on the moor.
As bait. I stuffed my trousers with pork and apple sausages.
Yeah.
I put two lamb chops in my shoulders and...
some other meat in your clothes.
Yes, and covered myself in salted butter. I walked out to the Dartmoor.
In the hope of what?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, hindsight, you know... Harry Hindsight's the biggest trader in town, if you ask me.
I haven't.
People do, you know, say to me, "You're mad. Why would you do that? What were you hoping would happen?" And I said to them very simply, I would hopefully meet face to face whatever this thing is. And then they went, "Well, hang on, won't he kill you?" And I said, "I don't care about that. I don't care if I'm killed. I would have seen the criminal face to face."
And so at this point, you were convinced that it was an actual person, it wasn't some sort of demonic dog roaming
the
moors.
Well, the papers were saying it was dogs. This old woman, some journalist had spoke to her, and she said there was no sound of dog, so it can't be dog. And then the journalist went, "Well, what if it's something like a ghost dog?" And she went, "Well, what's that?" And he went, "Well, you know, it's a dog, but it doesn't bark because it's a ghost." I mean... I don't know what the hell's going on here. When I read this, I thought, this isn't journalism. This is gutter press.
So it wasn't the belief of the people in the town. This is solely manufactured by the newspapers.
Jeremy Bell, and he is a bell, this guy.
Yeah.
I called him and said, "I'm reading your piece about ghost dogs. Have you lost your mind?" And he went, "Who am I speaking to, please?" I said, "I am Detective...
Murlock Bones."
Murlock Bones.
Yeah.
And he started going, you know, "As I've had all my life."
"Yeah, right. Yeah, and I'm, I don't know, Balbert Einstein."
I mean, I said to him, "What, is that a joke? Is that funny? do you know what, Jeremy? You are a bell. And then I'm looking at his name on the paper. I'm like, you are a bell, Jeremy. He went,
no, I'm not. I'm Feremy Mel.
I'm like, what the? Yeah. He's taking the piss out of it. So I said, where do you work, young man?
It was a newspaper. You've just read it.
Yeah, I know. He said that to me. He went,
are you sick?
And I thought, oh, I don't like this guy at all. So I went to the offices and I spoke to his editor. I said, is this the kind of journalism that you like poaching around this town? You know, ghost dogs kill 10 people. I said, is that what you're up to? And he went, well, read page 5. I went to page 5. There's some mad stuff about some killer wasps that are apparently building a tunnel underground. I mean, you know, it's an appalling newspaper, this. But I said, people read this stuff and people believe it. Now, you need to be on my side here. I do not believe it was ghost dogs. I believe it may have been, a human being. And they went, OK, well, what's your proof? And then that's when I went out onto the moor.
Yes. So it's what? It's nighttime. I guess it's pretty quite a sort of spooky sort of situation. You're there covered in butter and with sausages down your trousers or whatever. What happens?
I got about 10 minutes onto the moor. I'd been walking and, it was completely pitch black. I didn't know where I was going. All I had as guidance were the stars above me. Mm. I had my phone, of course, and that's got a torch, so I turned that on.
And a map.
You know how the desert, it's very hot in the day, but then at night it's very cold.
Mm.
Well, it's exactly the same mid-August on the moors.
Yeah.
It is bitter. I'm going to use that word, bitter. Thankfully, I was covered in butter, so I was actually quite warm. But
yep.
I could sense it was bitter. There was a crunch on foot.
And that's not just because you had bits of apple and pork in your socks.
Yes, that was due to I was wearing a bag of crisps on either shoe, because I wanted people to hear me coming, you know. I wanted to entice.
And so you're out there trying to sort of, you know, be bait. Do you see the beast? Do you see...
I was out there till about 4 in the morning. At 4:12, I remember it. I mean, as though it was yesterday. At 4:12, I hear rustling. Again, that was my the crisps on my feet. I was getting restless.
Yeah.
But this clearly had been picked up by... Now, again, I don't know what I'm looking for. The creature, the man, the woman, the beast. A shadow casts across the moor, and I see him. It's not a ghost dog. It's not a human being.
Right.
It's a mad dog.
Right. So it wasn't a ghost dog. It wasn't a murder. It was a dog. It was just a dog that had gone mad and killed 10 people.
Well, I mean, this dog is mad. Let me tell you.
I'm not disputing the madness of the dog. I want to make absolutely clear, there wasn't any murder or any foul play. It was just a mad dog.
Correct.
Right.
But he came over to me.
And this dog is mad, mind, and killed 10 people.
Yeah, well, I'm scared.
Who by coincidence happened to work in the same branch of Debenhams, but that's by the by.
Yeah, that is by the by. That was just sad.
Right.
Also, they didn't shut the shop the next day. I thought that was quite rude. I was like, well, who's on floor 3?
Yeah.
Anyway, the dog can't believe his luck. I mean, imagine you're a dog and you're hungry, and then a bloke comes around with sausages and butter.
And this dog is mad.
This dog is mad. Honestly. I've met some mad people in my time, you know, because that's what I do. I go into, you know, I talk to mad people. I've never come across a mad dog like this. And also it had like a kind of, you know, like he had like David Bowie had a multicoloured eye. It's like that.
Right.
He had like, he had a weird like marble eye. I don't know. The guy was insane. So anyway, he's jumping all over me. He was ravishing me. Ravishing.
Right. I don't think that word means what you think it means in that context. So you're there being attacked by this mad dog.
He was tearing all my clothes off, taking all the sausages, and so I ran. I just ran across the moor.
Yeah.
And I'm completely naked, covered in
butter. Of course you are.
I'm thinking to myself, as long as I can get back to the town, I'll be all right. So I run up, and there's that old woman again, you know, the one who talked about the ghost dogs.
Oh, yeah, well, I didn't mention the ghost dogs, but the journalist invented it from what she was saying.
Yeah, I said, she said, are you okay? I said, do I look okay? I'm completely naked, covered in butter, but it turns out that journalist was half right. And she went, oh, what, there's a ghost on the moor?
Yeah.
I was like, no, you're mad. It's a dog out there that's mad and it's killing people. So she went, right, what are we going to do? I went, you're going to have to go out there and get the dog.
Why?
I can't go back.
Right.
She went, why me? I said, if that thing stays out there, he's probably got another 10 minutes before he finishes off those sausages. And then I reckon he's going to run into town. So she started panicking. She was like, well, we have to warn the village. I said, well, do you know anyone? She went, what about Jeremy Bell?
The journalist.
Yeah. She went, he could put it in his newspaper.
This is an immediate threat. Even if you stop the press and make the papers, surely it's hours before the news of this is distributed around the village.
That's what I said. But it's a small village, and right. it's a small newspaper.
Oh, it has a circulation of 100, does it?
Yeah, and it goes up at Christmas for the TB Guide to about 200. So they're doing all right. She says, if we call Jeremy, we can get it on the front page. And then, you know, maybe by the time the papers come out, we can warn people. And I said, you know, like you have questioned, can this be done in 20 minutes, woman? And she went, we can only try. And I thought, oh, I like that. So I call up Jeremy. I said, hello, is that Jeremy? He went,
no, it's Bury Me from...
You know, he's doing my name. I went, do you know what, mate? I don't care. I've got a new story for you. He went,
what?
I said, it's going to go on your front page. He said,
well, we're about to press print.
And I said, hold the front page, Jeremy. There's a mad dog on the loose and it's going to be in the village in about 20 minutes. He went,
well, I'm only going to be able to print about 5 of those.
Right.
And I said, just do it. Just do it. Just do it.
It wasn't printed like a newspaper. He just had like a regular office printer. He would run out a few copies, would he, and drop it in the village shop.
I mean, he's the only one who works at the newspaper. It's right. Him and an editor, which is his brother.
What's it called?
The Dartmoor Times.
Right.
And, you know, who makes their own newspaper? Weird. But I said, get it out. Jeremy, get it out, get it out, get it out. He pressed print. I could hear him.
Yep.
Print.
Hear it slowly coming off the inkjet printer.
So I'm there with the woman, and her name was Claire, by the way. Fantastic lady. And I said, meet us at the clock tower. Jeremy runs down with these 5 newspapers, and he said, right, this is about, we've got about 10 minutes to go, I think, before this dog turns up.
It's got quite a specific schedule, this dog, for something that's so mad. He really does. He literally, almost like clockwork. You've got 10 minutes of the 20 minutes remaining in order to what? To distribute these 5 newspapers around the town.
Yeah. So I said, right, how many you got? He said, I've got 5. I went, okay, well, 1 for Claire, 1 for me.
What does she need a news? Why do you need a newspaper? You know the story. That's 40% of your newspapers already consumed, and you haven't told anybody else.
Jeremy has to have one, obviously.
Why? Why does he have one? He knows the story. That's 3 out of 5 newspapers gone. Right, what are you doing with the other 2? How are you distributing those?
The key is the local pub. That's where everyone goes.
Right.
We run down to the local pub. Me, Claire, Jeremy, we barge in. We go, look, we all hold up our newspapers. We go, read that and weep.
Yeah, what does the front page say?
The front page.
What did the front page say? What was on the front page of that newspaper?
We all hold up our newspapers.
Yeah.
Front page says... mad ghost dog.
Right, he's put the ghost bit back in again.
20 minutes away.
Right, as frustrating as that may be, at least it gets the message out that people should, you know, be careful about this incoming dog.
I said to Jeremy, what the fuck is this? I told you it's not a ghost dog. And also, it ain't 20 minutes now, is it? It's Christ, it's 5 minutes. And the pub starts going mad because they're passing around the newspaper and they're going, ghost dog, 20 minutes, ghost dog. I'm like, I stand on a table, I go, look, it's not a bloody ghost. And they're like, how are we going to see a ghost dog? We can't see ghost. I mean, I'm like, calm the fuck down. Ignore the paper. It's complete bollocks. But there is a mad dog coming down from the moor and he's going to be here in about...
5 minutes.
In about a minute and a half.
Right. What happened?
Oh, my God. There's a knock at the door.
There's a knock at the door? Yep. Who's that?
The pub goes quiet.
Sure. Tense situation.
there's a chill in the air, of course. Somebody says, somebody at the back goes, can ghosts knock? They just say, just walk through doors. I'm like, it's right. Not a ghost.
It's just a regular mad dog.
Well, it's like, who's going to open it? I say, Claire, open the door. She's like, what?
Why are you always making Claire do this? Claire goes to open the door.
It's Jeremy's brother, the editor.
Right. Yeah.
He's got five more copies
of the newspaper.
Of the newspaper. I'm like, I go over to him, I slam the door shut, I get right in his grill, and I go, your rag disgusts me. There is nothing of what... I look at the front page. It's a late edition. Ghost dog is outside.
Right. Up to the minute newspaper updates.
Yeah. And I said to him, it's not a ghost dog. Like, why do you keep putting ghost?
Yeah,
it's just dog is outside. He's outside. Anyway, that starts going around the pub. Dog is outside. Dog is outside.
What happens?
We all look out the windows. We can see this dog pacing around.
Big dog.
Oh, my God.
Big mad dog.
He's mad. He's big. And he's a dog. It's a big mad dog. We're all looking at it thinking, how the hell are we going to... What are we going to do here? I can tell he's eaten all of my sausages.
Right.
He looks quite full. I can tell by his belly that he's had a bit of a feed, but his eyes are telling me something else.
What are the eyes saying?
He's hungry.
Right.
He's hungry for blood. I'm thinking, you know, I'm panicking now. I'm really kind of... We're all looking at each other like, well, at what point do we leave? How are we going to sort this out? The landlord, he goes behind the bar. He kind of... Well, I thought he was going for a baseball bat. Wrong. A Charles II musket.
Oh, I see. It's an old pub. It's got sort of old memorabilia from the Civil War.
Yeah. He shot himself.
Right.
So that was him gone.
Right. He's okay. He'd had enough. It was too much.
That's him gone.
Yeah.
So I went, well, that's really annoying. And everyone else was like, yeah, that's really annoying. So I was like, well, what are we going to do? They went, well, why don't you get the musket and shoot the dog? Now, I solve crime.
Yes.
I don't commit crime.
No, I don't
think... To shoot the dog would be a crime.
Is it in that situation? This is a dog that has killed already 10 people. Clearly is, you know, a problem. I don't think it would be a crime to defend yourself in that scenario.
Correct. But I still thought Claire should do it.
Right.
So we opened a little window. Now, Claire shot... you know, because she keeps missing.
Oh, so muskets take a long time to reload because don't they have to load them through the front?
Well, yeah, that's why she keeps missing, because she keeps aiming at where he was about 30 seconds after he'd gone.
Well, so hang on a minute. So she loads the musket and then shoots at the position where the dog was when she began reloading. Right.
Yeah, which isn't clever, is it?
No.
So I said to her, why don't you shoot where you think he's going to be?
Right, yeah.
She went, what do you mean? Like, shoot, like, where I think he'll be in a minute's time or something like that. I said, yeah. Like, shoot into the future, because by the time you've reloaded, he'll be there.
Yeah.
I thought, this has to work. This has to work!
Fingers crossed.
We had one bullet left.
Did you? Right, so the stakes are really high now. Even though the dog can't get in the pub.
No, the dog can't get in, so we're right. Perfectly safe.
Yeah, but you've got one bullet left in your musket. Claire is, you know, has been advised to aim in front of the dog.
Aim where the dog is going to be in a minute's time. Don't aim at where he is.
Now.
So she's looking at the dog. The dog was outside W.H. Smith. She worked out in a minute's time the way he was kind of stopping and starting. And
yeah, I don't really... Does this matter? Okay, she aims in front of him.
In a minute's time, she thought he was going to be around about Costa.
Right. I mean, I'd love the way you paint detail, but I think in this instance, this particular instance of Claire, the old woman, shooting a dog, we could just get to the end of it.
She shoots the dog. The dog is now stuffed in the pub. And as a reward, I was given a silver statue of the dog.
That was it. Claire shoots the dog. they stuff it and put it in the pub. But the landlord, unfortunately, dead by his own hands. And you got a little silver memorial of that occasion.
Yes. And, you know, about a year later, I took a year off after that. That was an appalling case. But a year later, I thought, I'm going to go over and I'm going to, I'm going to, you know, see some old friends. I went over to the offices of the newspaper. I met Jeremy and his brother again. And
they've not got offices. It's surely it's just in their house.
Yes, right. But they had Microsoft Office.
Oh, okay.
So
they called it the office.
They do technically have an office.
Yeah. You go to the office, meet Jeremy and his brother.
We broke bread. We had a glass of wine, and I said to them, do you know what would be nice? If maybe on the front page of the year anniversary, we had a picture together.
Yeah.
And so he said, sure. So we took a picture, and they pressed print.
Yeah. What was the headline? What was the picture?
So the picture was us three, very nice. And the headline was quite simply, Ghost Dog is back.
Right, well, I'm going to have to leave it there. Murlock Bones, thank you very much for joining us.
I really do want to thank you for asking me to talk to you today.
Well, that's all we've got time for. This episode was researched by John Kearns and edited by Matt Ewins. Sound effects were added by Ben Williams, and the theme tune is by Nikki Green. We're back for a slightly shorter series of about 8 episodes before Christmas, but please write a review or tell a friend if you're enjoying it. Hopefully in the new year we might be able to go back to doing these live, so follow our Twitter account at MicroscopeFun for details of that. Next episode, I'll be talking to a fish and chip shop owner who came across a caveman. But until then, remain vigilant and catch you next time on Microscope.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.